Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. It is Victory Friday in the A-10, in between the first and second rounds of the tournament. We're going to have previews coming up right after this. St. Louis, Michigan, VCU, Illinois. But before that, we still have one game left to recap. And to do that with me, I have Zach Miller of the Midtown Madness podcast. Zach, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I am on cloud nine. That could not have gone any better. just an incredible performance from the Billikens, and the vibes are super high. I mean, now we're playing with house money. You know, one of those things being the mid-major, you go into a game, you obviously get to determine as a fan, you have that Napoleon complex. Like, we're here. We're not just here to look pretty and be a fun sideshow. We're here to win games. And we won that game. And now you go into Michigan, you're playing with a, you know, there's nothing to lose anymore. And that makes us dangerous.
We do need a mid-major to make the Sweet 16 this year. We're basically down to St. Louis, VCU, High Point, and maybe Utah State and Northern Iowa. Utah State's up 2 at this moment on Villanova, so they got to play Arizona after this. But I don't even know where to start with talking about this game, because it was just such a pure ass kicking that there's not that much analysis to be done. I mean, Deion Brown was great at the beginning; he shot 9 for 10 overall. I think for me, the one moment where I realized, oh, they might actually just demolish this team, was when Kellen Thames hit that 3. I forgot how bad his shot looks.
The funniest, I think I saw a tweet out there. I'm sorry, I can't credit it. But it was like, if you told us that it was like we scored whatever number of points in the paint and our only three-pointer was made by, at that point, was made by Kellen Thames, who shoots, you know, 30% at best. So, if Kellen Thames is knocking down shots, we're either in a lot of – if he has to make that shot, we're either in a lot of trouble or in a really good spot. And thankfully, it was a really good spot.
Yeah, that was to go up 19-12. He had hit 2 layups right before that. And kind of the stat for St. Louis as to how well this went, Thames only played 14 minutes in this game because they were able to rest him. I don't think he played more than like 3 minutes the entire second half, but you can just go up and down. And Sharma, 12 points, was great. Avila had his normal, just like crappy stat line in a game where SLU killed their opponent because he didn't have to do anything. 12-5-5. McCautry was good really early on, 13-9 for him. Brady Dunlap hit a bunch of threes in the second half, but they got to 100. They shot 32% from three. And that's the most astounding part. You would have assumed like, oh, they lit it up. They hit 12, 13 threes. They were actually terrible shooting the ball.
Yeah, and I'll say this, and anybody can call me on it. My co-host Peter can back me on this. He asked me how I was feeling yesterday. I said, confident. I think I watched that Ole Miss game against Georgia, and I had seen Ole Miss ran that kind of the same coverage that the Billikens ended up running. And I had seen the Billikens run that to perfection against GW with Castro. And I was like, SLU can do that. And they're a better offensive team. And I thought, I thought basically the key was just going to run them off the 3-point line early. Do not let them get a shot within 7 to 10 seconds. And then from there, I think you can absolutely play them straight up. I thought the athletic advantage, it's funny. You look at this game, and if some of your listeners will remember that 11-12 Billiken team going up against Memphis, the entire week was the media talking about, oh, the athletes of Memphis. Yeah. They're going to overwhelm the Bill. It's like, dude, these are all Division I basketball players. Like, yeah, Robbie Avila is not an athlete, but like, this isn't there's so much closer of an athletic ability. It was just very funny that the elitely effective team, not the most. I don't know. I'm rambling. I'm so hyped. That was an unbelievable performance.
But just getting to your point, though, that it was really only two spectacular athletes. It was Cyril, who, I mean, he only played 12 minutes in this game because he couldn't deal with the St. Louis perimeter speed and just being spread out all over the place. And then Blue Kane, who, let's be honest, is a way better athlete than anyone on St. Louis and most people in
Well,
Division I basketball.
it's funny you bring up Blue Kane. You're my boy Blue. Is that I watched the highlights, but for the like 30th time right before we went on here, and Dunlap has Blue Kane on him on the perimeter, and he is. And the announcer says that he's clapping for the ball. He wants that ball. And then he drives on Blue Kane and lays the ball in. So it's wild because I said the same thing about Blue Kane watching film on him. Plus some of these YouTube channels that have like the scouting reports. I super interesting videos where you can like it's like an hour long quick blurb. They were like, oh, terrible in the pick and roll. Blue Kane's an incredible athlete. I'm like, yeah, that's an insane dunk that he put down. I think he put it down against Ole Miss, but no, I was just I thought the Billikens just really kind of played. They played exactly how they played against Dayton at Chaffetz.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of that, although Dayton's whole team sucked. Georgia at least got a really good game out of Jeremiah Wilkinson, who had 30 points, and most of that was when the game still mattered too. I mean, those last 10 minutes, both teams were in pure pickup game. Who can make the most threes and just not give up bad offensive rebounds type territory? So, I mean, we really only got to look at the first 30 minutes to evaluate this. It was kind of a bummer. It felt like Slew could have gotten to like 115 if they had really kept trying.
Yeah, I went back and forth on whether I wanted that. I certainly wanted them to just completely boat race them. I thought we should have held on to get to 103 or 102 earlier to get the highest score of the day. But hey, if you win a game by effectively 40 points in the NCAA tournament, you can handle the end of game scenario however you want. Shirts is on his way to godlike territory among Billiken fans after last night.
Yeah, congratulations to Slew on giving him the extension already. And if they beat
Well,
Michigan, they probably got to give him another raise regardless. But if not, they probably can get away with this deal, I would think.
yeah, I mean, I don't think it's gonna matter. I with without get I try as best I can to get out of like the emotional viewpoint of Josh Schertz. I just think his modus operandi, his reason that he coaches is to build and not necessarily his career. Build a program in building his career, if that makes sense. I don't necessarily think it's going to be an extra challenge to keep him around. I think as long as you keep lining his pockets and paying players at a level that will keep him going to the NCAA tournament year in, year out, I think he will be fairly loyal. I may look like an asshole and an idiot for saying that now, but like that's just the vibe I get. I just feel like he's a builder
Well, and at
more
least
than a
keeping them away
hopper.
from like Providence, which
Oh
is
yeah, no, I mean that
barely
was
a better
easy.
job than St.
That was
Louis.
easy. No,
So,
it's not even. Not even. But Providence is the Davidson. With of the Big East without being maybe the LaSalle, but Providence is a hockey school. They just have meatheads that are sports fans. It's like SEC without the money. Like I said about Georgia fans, there were no Georgia fans at that game. Like Georgia fans are football fans. They aren't. And the only reason the SEC they can sell out night in and night out is that football. That carryover of school spirit from football. So like Georgia's not getting the same 200 to 500 fans that a mid-major basketball only school is getting to the NCAA tournament. They don't care enough to go from Georgia to Buffalo. So it was a pseudo home game for the Billikens to or last night. It was
Yeah,
crazy.
at least not a true neutral, because St. Louis fans
No.
actually have something to care about. Although St. Louis to Buffalo is not exactly an easy journey. They got kind of screwed that there wasn't like a good central site this year, because I don't think they were ever going to actually get sent to St. Louis. That would have been too nice of a situation for
Well,
a
Mizzou
9-10
got it.
seed.
Mizzou got it as a 10, though.
They got to at least go like an hour and a half, though, right?
I mean, I don't even need to stop for gas. Like, if you don't have to stop for gas, that's a hell of a that's a hell of a hometown. And honestly, I would say most Missouri fans live in St. Louis. I am sure it's going to be a madhouse downtown. I can't imagine if SLU had gotten the 10 seed or the 7 seed in St. Louis, with Mizzou being on the other, not other 10-7 game, and both of those teams playing, to the ticket prices would have been outrageous.
Well, it's like Duke and Carolina both being down in Greenville.
Yeah. Are they, do they do that often? I don't pay it. I haven't paid attention to the sites since like we got in the tournament. Like, we have to be in the tournament for me to care about where these games are played.
I know for like the top seeds, they definitely try to give them a close one. So like when Duke gets a one seed, they want
Yeah,
to put
they're
them as
always
close to
white.
home as possible. I read a great thread. I forget who it was from. It was like Bowertology, if I want to guess, that went line by line and tried to figure out, oh, how did they put everyone in these slots? And it did seem the committee cared about geography this year in giving
Ex
teams not a super far travel.
Yeah, and I think that's where the money's made, if we're being honest. Yes, I would like competitive balance, and you go wherever your seat indicates. But also, it's how you get, you don't have half empty arenas, which it looks like the crowd's been great so far.
Yeah, I know the resale market was basically tapped out for tomorrow in Buffalo, so
Oh,
certainly
shit.
getting
Well,
good crowds there.
I will not, unfortunately, I won't be there. But I was out last night watching the game at one of the, like, kind of like a it's called Fox Sports Midwest Live or Bally Sports. It's like a ballpark village. It's a big entertainment district. And the Miami Cheer Squad came in. They were out last night. Their gear is fresh, by the way. Like, I'm such a gear whore. I think they thought I was creeping, but I just was looking at their sweet tracksuits. But yeah, no, they were full on the Billiken train. It's exciting to see, like, the Barstool Sports guys. Like, there's a couple of the guys from the Mostly Sports show that, I guess there's like some sort of competition, and they picked SLU. So it's like Brandon Walker, the SEC guy, and then a couple of other guys, but they're like on the SLU hype train. So, and it felt like we were not getting the national headlines. Like, we were sliding under the radar as that 9 seed, even though we had been like the darling for most of the year, which was kind of a crazy thing to have happen.
That's the craziest part of that game is, I saw a chart that it was basically performance in the final month of the season compared to the season as a whole. And St. Louis had the biggest drop off of all 68 teams in the field. And even during that GW game in the quarterfinals, when they went down by nearly 20, we were kind of looking at each other just going, oh, is this team about to just get smacked in the first round of the tournament? And they inexplicably somehow found like their second or third best performance of the year.
Yeah, it's what you do. I don't even know. I think they just kind of, I think a lot of that second half performance has to do with the change of the court. So, like, in the second half, you're
You've been
defending.
on this for weeks.
Yes,
Explain this
yes.
theory to my listeners.
Okay, so essentially, it's actually a betting theory that was an advantage player took advantage of the casinos with the NBA. So in college, every game starts with, what is it? You're attacking to the other team's bench. And then in the second half, you attack to your own bench, right? So in the NBA, it can fluctuate. I think I don't know how the setups are different in all the arenas. It's not standardized. So this guy figured out that that was hindering offensive performances depending on where the teams were attacking, whether or not the defense was on the same side as their own bench. So in college, a team always defends next to their bench in the first half and always defends away from their bench in the second half. And you can see the line on second halves go up. And I think with the randomness, to tie it all back in on this whole stupid rant, is that essentially Josh Schertz's offense is so predicated on kind of just throwing teams in a spin cycle and randomness. And so much communication on the defensive end to kind of stop this offense, that's why the Billikens have a better record in the second half, is that the opposing teams aren't able to communicate with their bench on defense.
Maybe they just need shirts to communicate on offense. Could be part of it too.
That too. That
I think
too.
you're more so
That's
right. I'm
interesting.
just throwing this out just for the hell
No,
of it.
I love it. I now you're throwing my head in a spin cycle. No, I thought it was interesting. I got into a lot of the Georgia message boards and Reddits right before we got on, and man, it is like, I love the like these Power Five schools. Like, these guys fucking suck. These guys, this SLU team's terrible. This is an embarrassment. This is the like, how do we lose to a mid-major? Freaking St. Freaking Louis, and you're like, guys. Like, I'm sorry. Like, we just like that was a basketball clinic. That had nothing to do with Georgia playing poorly. That was Georgia didn't have the proper guys to handle that Billiken team. It
I
was
mean,
just it was.
their preparation seemed awful too. It is kind of funny. If there were two games so far in this tournament that would get their coach fired, it's North Carolina and Georgia right now.
Yeah.
I
It's
assume Mike
fucked
White's
up.
fine, but still.
That feels like a slight at the A10, doesn't
I mean, St. Louis was up by
it?
40 for a massive chunk of this game.
100 to 60 even. That's a beautiful score line.
Yes, it is. My last question on the game for you though, who was your MVP in this? Because I guess mine's Deion Brown, just because he was so critical to setting the pace during those like 10 minutes where the game was legitimately in doubt.
I think you're right. I think, and you said setting the pace, and as you were saying, setting the pace, I finished with tone. I thought he said, I'm gonna get inside. You're not gonna stop me. He very much went Jordan Air Jet, in this game, I thought. I thought he was great. He's been great all season, man. He really is. Like, I have a very hard time deciding on the glue guy for this team, between Kellen Thames and Deion Brown. Deion Brown is such a dog, but Kellen Thames is such a St. Louis guy with that team. He's just a team guy, and an inspirational story. So it's I have a hard time picking between these two. And Robbie was great too. I mean, everybody, like, what was it? 9 guys with 9 points or
Eight
eight
guys with
points?
nine. I don't think OT. Yeah. Or no, wait. No, the
Otieno
only
was
guy who
out.
didn't was Trey Green.
Oh my. What do you have? Like
He had
seven, six?
seven, but he also had five
Yeah.
assists.
Oh my God.
Every
And he
starter
would.
had three or more assists in this game.
I can't tell you how much I was happy with the way Paulo Tiano played. I had been critical, something, something, Tarzan, something, something, Jane, right? Like, he just doesn't play to his size. He doesn't play to his imposing figure. And he did in this game, and I was super impressed with him.
Yeah, I mean, everyone looked great all around. Like I said, that's my favorite stat. All five starters had three plus assists in this one of them. Brady Dunlap had four off the bench himself,
He was
but
so good. He was so good.
One of the funniest Deion Brown things is I heard someone comment this week that, like, oh, Georgia will probably try to get them in switches, try to post up Brown. I go the other way where I think he's going to be asked to do some of the Axel Lendenborg work in the Michigan game because he's been good on bigger players this year. But just to close it out here, any thoughts on Michigan in this matchup with a day out?
I think it is going to be one of the most bizarre games to watch. I'm fully going in like with no expectations. I'm super happy. I think we can win. We absolutely can win. I will be surprised if we win, but not shocked. And I am so. I'm so anxious to see this Dusty Shirts matchup. That is, I fucking feel like we have the guy. Like, I feel like Shirts is that guy. I'm getting into my, my heart at this point. I'm going from head to heart. And it feels special. I don't know. If they continue to play with the confidence they did last night, let's go. We're on to Chicago.
I mean, Church could be that guy. Dusty May also could be that guy. So that's one of the most fun pieces of this
Right.
game.
I think the by the way, shout out VCU. I was super happy to watch that game. It was I was down at Ballpark Village for the end of that game, and it was the crowd was vehemently behind the Rams in that one. So and also Djokovic had like he's in that spot where like now I can respect him. I don't have to hate him anymore because I'm never gonna see him again. Unless we get a VCU SLU final, I think.
Are they on the opposites? Where's
I
my
don't know.
bracket? Yeah, they're on opposite sides.
Oh
It would have to
man.
be the final. But
Can you imagine?
just get one. Like, we just need one of them into the Sweet 16. I guess I can close it
Yes.
out with this stat. I was going to save it to tweet Saturday morning, but we haven't had a Sweet 16 team in the A10 since 2014, Dayton. The league is 0-8 in the second round since then. They're 1-9 if you include that day because St. Louis lost to Louisville a couple hours before Dayton beat Syracuse. So this is going to
Yeah,
be a big
we got to
one.
do it. Who does VCU have?
They have Illinois.
Illinois. I don't hate that. I don't hate that. I find some of these programs to be just like Georgia. There was, I mean, there's no like they have no place in this tournament. I'm not gonna lie. Like that school, the schools that are all in on football and just kind of whatever. Like they don't belong in this tournament. They're unserious, and I just thought part of going into that Georgia game was that Georgia just feels like an unserious basketball school, except for the SEC storied Miracle Three. Go watch that on ESPN when you. It's a great documentary on Georgia winning 4 games in 3 days in 2006. I want to say it's really interesting. Anyway, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Where can all the listeners, if they don't know about it already, find you and
Sure.
find the Midtown Madness podcast?
We are on Twitter and Instagram. I believe it is at Midtown Mad Pod. I'm at Zach Miller MMP with no H or K on Zach. If you want to find us on YouTube or the Midtown Madness podcast, we release episodes every Monday on YouTube. And any audio platform, I think, mostly Spotify and Apple Music. Roll Bills, man. Roll, and go Rams, go, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know
Midtown
what their thing is.
Madness, mostly men's basketball this time of year, but you guys go as deep as St. Louis women's tennis. You guys cover it all. So everyone go check that out.
It's we like to give updates. Most of it is basketball, like you said, and we love our Billiken soccer though. We had a great time. This is ridiculous. We had a Final Four in men's soccer and a second round in basketball. I don't know what I did to deserve this, but I'm not complaining.
Well, Life is good right now for Zach Miller as a sports fan. And Zach, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to start our game previews looking at St. Louis and Michigan, the early 12-10 game on Saturday. And to do that, I'm joined by Alejandro Zuniga of the Michigan Insider on 24/7 Sports. Alejandro, thank you for hopping on.
Thanks for having me. It's been an exciting first day of basketball out here in Buffalo. Excited for what should be a really interesting round of 32 between St. Louis and Michigan and everything else we have going on here in upstate New York.
Yeah, and we were chatting a little bit before, and it always just makes me happy as a basketball fan to hear that you stuck around after the Michigan game to watch St. Louis. I mean, why not take advantage of just the free seat and a chance to chill out and watch some basketball? But
Yeah, absolutely.
what
I
were
mean, you
your
got courtside seats. You can't say no, right?
oh yeah. What were your Billikens takeaways out of that game?
Yeah, I mean, it was my first time, I want to say this season, watching St. Louis. I was obviously very, very impressed. I mean, you think an 8-9 game is going to be a toss-up. Obviously, you do a little bit of watching some highlights, some clips beforehand. You look at a KenPom resume, things like that. You see before the game, even KenPom, I think they gave the Billikens maybe a 45% chance of winning the game. And certainly that's not how that played out. I think what really impressed me most, of course, was looking at the balance. I mean, you see a team that scored 100 plus points and you're thinking, okay, maybe Robbie Avila went off for 25 or 30 or what have you. But you look up and down the box score and it reflects what we saw in person, which is it's a very balanced team. Last night it was six players scoring in double figures. Obviously, 75% shooting on twos, like that's no matter who the opponent is, that's impressive. And when it's a power four opponent, it's a Georgia team that, like everyone in this tournament, is fighting for its life. That's incredible stuff. So very, very interested to see how that looks and what will be certainly a step up in competition against a better defensive Michigan tomorrow.
Yeah, it is a fun little trick if for people who don't know much about St. Louis when they see the stats, the Robbie Avila numbers just do not jump off the page at you, but it's because those blowout games they have, his numbers stink because he gets in there and just kind of spreads the ball around, and that's why all of a sudden you see, oh, he had 12 points even though St. Louis scored 100. But it's a nice little trick of the Billiken star. But he This season, and this is where the Michigan matchup becomes so fascinating. His big bugaboo is that he struggles to deal with elite big centers. And St. Louis all year has been able to invert the matchups, get Amari McCautry on them, get Paulo Tiano, even sometimes an undersized Deion Brown. And then they can hide Avila on whoever the crappy forward sitting in the corner is. You cannot do that against Michigan. I mean, Michigan's small forward would be an elite starting center in the A-10, but that combination of Mara, Lendenborg, and Moraes Johnson, is there any rest for opposing defenses against these three?
I mean, I'd say that the one benefit, or maybe the one upside, is that they don't all three play together all the time. I mean, all three of them are going to be in the starting lineup. They're going to get the first 4 or 5 minutes together. They might close out the game, but Michigan isn't typically running all three bigs at the same time. So there is that. I will say too is that, when I'm watching St. Louis and when I watched them yesterday, what A, it reminds me of watching Michigan offensively a little bit. And I know we can talk and we will talk today to both head coaches here in Buffalo. But I know both head coaches, they're friends. They talk a lot when it's the off season. So it's two teams that know each other well. But certainly Michigan's a big team. And that's what Michigan has been able to do against basically everyone they face this season is they can dominate inside. So I'll be very curious to see, what Robbie Avila looks against, a big step up in competition. But at the same time, the times Michigan has struggled this season, you think back to their first loss was against a five out team in Wisconsin that was able to take Adai Mara, Michigan's 7-foot-3 center, pull him out to the perimeter where he's less comfortable. When Purdue was able to win the Big Ten championship, the Big Ten tournament championship game last week, it was running a two-man game where they were able to get Adai Mara out in space where he was a little bit less comfortable. Even a game like Nebraska. Nebraska runs I mean, at least big picture conceptually, a bit of a similar offense where, they're not full ball screen. They're running a lot of, it's a lot of cutting motion. They're trying to spread the floor. It's a bit more of that controlled chaos, like St. Louis likes to do. And that's a game that Michigan did win, but that first half was a bit of a debacle for the Wolverines defensively. So that's where I think, listen, do I expect St. Louis to pull off the shocker? I'm not going to sit here and predict it, but I do think that they have the ability to. Like, it wouldn't stun me if we're seeing St. Louis in the Sweet 16 rather than Michigan.
Yeah, and that's the things we got to break down here, because you look on paper, and this is so menacing, where you've Yaxel Lendenborg, an All-American standing 6'9", 240, who is the small forward in the Michigan starting lineup. I mean, Mara and Johnson both just dwarf him in size. Three guys who are scoring 11.9 per game or better. Three guys who have 6.9 rebounds a game or better. I mean, and two of them, Mara and Lendenborg, are actually playmakers too. And it is this just ridiculously daunting thing that Dusty May has somehow mastered now, playing these multiple elite skilled bigs together in a world where basically no one else wants to do this save for like the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, it's something that at least at Michigan really developed last year when they were able to pair Danny Wolf, who's now making his name in the NBA a little bit, and Vladislav Golden, who followed him from FAU and was previously briefly at the power four level, I believe at Texas Tech. So that's something that developed last year, and Michigan is able to run it back even beyond what they did last year with Yaxel. He was the number one ranked player in the transfer portal to 24/7 Sports. Pair him with Merez Johnson, who transferred over from Illinois, Adai Mara, who transferred over to UCLA, and that's imposing. And the thing is, it's worked. And the reason it's worked is, Yaxel Lendeborg and Robbie Avila, that they're not the same player, the same type of player necessarily, but they have some similarities in the way that the team, their stats don't always look fantastic, but there's a reason that Yaxel is, seventh on the KenPom Player of the Year standings. There's a reason why he was a Big Ten Player of the Year, is that so much of what Michigan does well is because Yaxel Lendeborg is so versatile. I think his defense is severely underrated. He's someone he's very switchable. He can really guard one through five. When there are times that Michigan's struggling a bit defensively, Michigan likes to switch everything. But there are times where Yaxel kind of take over and say, "No, like I'm putting myself on this guy. I'm going to shut this guy down." But then offensively, as you've alluded to, like, he's someone at his size. He's a presence inside. He's a strong 3-point shooter. He's shooting 35% on threes. Hit a game winner to get Michigan to the Big Ten championship game at the buzzer against Wisconsin, and then of course can operate out of the ball screen, both as a ball handler. He can be the role guy, and he's someone who can facilitate as a passer as well. There aren't many people at his size who can do what he does, and then you pair that with a 6'9" beast in Merez Johnson Jr., who is one of the more physical players you'll see attacking the glass on both the offensive and defensive side, and Adai Mara, who is 7'3". And that's really all you have to say, is he's 7'3". He sticks his hands up, and he does, like, he cut down the nets when Michigan won the Big Ten championship. He didn't have to use the ladder to cut down the net, right? He can dunk without jumping. He's the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. He's not fantastic out in space, but he's gotten better at it. And if you can keep him in the paint, I know that St. Louis, number one in the country in average 2-point distance, they get so many of their shots at the rim. That will be a challenge if Adai Mara is in the paint.
So Lendenborg, just to go back to him, first team All-American in addition to being Big Ten Player of the Year, although I guess that probably goes hand in hand and is a given at this point. You win one, you probably win the other. The KenPom page for him is just unreal. The amount of red, nationally ranked in true shooting percentage, offensive and defensive rebounding percentage, although he is the last guy on the defensive rebounding page leaderboard. Free throw rate, block rate, free throw percentage, 2-point percentage. He's not ranked in 3-point, but he shot 35%. That's certainly good enough for a player of his skill. And he is just kind of a nightmare for everyone. And maybe St. Louis can slow him down. They got just a whole bunch of physical forwards, but they're not going to have anybody who can match that size speed combo.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say with him, and if you're looking for an angle, like a path to victory, there is Yaxel Anderborg. While yes, he's very deserving of all the praise he's gotten this season. He's worked his way up the NBA draft boards after a prolific career at UAB. Is that he's not the most consistent offensive player, and there are games where you feel like he disappears a little bit, where. He even said as much as it was at halftime of the Big Ten tournament semifinal against Wisconsin. He's doing his TV interview and he says he feels like he's played the worst two games of his career and he doesn't know what's going on. So there are moments where you feel like he's not like he doesn't realize that he's Yaxel Lendeborg. He doesn't realize that he's 6'9", 240 and has the ball handling skills of someone who's 6'4". So there is that. He's also working off of an ankle injury. He twisted his ankle in the Big Ten tournament final game against Purdue. Obviously he had no injury designation and played fine in the first round win over Howard. But he's maybe that's a bit of a lingering effect. So there is that. I would say like if you're looking for when doesn't Yaxel Lendeborg perform up to his level? I think it's more personal, quite honestly. Is he doesn't he'll get matched up. He was matched up with Braden Smith and Foster and Fletcher Loyer, excuse me, against Purdue. Those are smaller guards, and Michigan either wasn't finding him and feeding him the ball, or he wasn't doing enough work, before the pass, getting into good position to get those passes. So there are opportunities where, hey, if you want to put a smaller guy on Yaxel, like he might not always take advantage of that matchup in the ways that physically he is very much capable of doing.
So one piece of potential weakness for Michigan could be that point guard spot where they lose LJ Cason to a torn ACL a couple weeks ago. I saw multiple national writers refer to him as the best backup point guard in college basketball, which, I mean, it always hurts to lose a key player, but seventh in scoring, certainly something that you can absorb and still potentially even win a national title. But Elliott Cadeau, who is clearly having his best season of his career numbers-wise, is still Elliott Cadeau. And I mean, as someone who hasn't watched Michigan as extensively as I used to watch North Carolina, is he still capable of that once every 3 or 4 games just completely destroying his own team?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go quite that far, right? I mean, Michigan, what they're 32-3,
Yeah, I mean,
so
this is
there
not
hasn't.
young Elliott Cadeau of 2 years ago who could sink an entire game on his own, but.
Yeah, so there are moments though. I mean, I'd point back to the Northwestern game where Michigan was down double digits on the road against a solid but unspectacular Northwestern team, and what ended up happening is they ended up pretty much benching him for the majority of the second half. Put in LJ Cason, and Michigan came back and won that game by double digits. Obviously, Michigan doesn't have that luxury anymore. LJ Cason is, as you mentioned, out for the year with a torn ACL. That puts a lot of different pressures on Elliott Cadeau. Number one is he is the smallest player who Michigan's going to play consistently. I believe he's the shortest player on their roster. He's listed at 6'1". He is someone who is a bit of a, he's a pest defensively. But since LJ Cason was hurt, Michigan needs him to not be picking up those defensive fouls. So his defensive kind of aggression and his tenacity on the defensive side of the ball, I'd say, has taken a bit of a step back because Michigan needs him to play more minutes if they want to make a deep run in this tournament. I'll say for what's gone well for him this season, he has certainly improved as a shooter. He's shooting 36 plus percent from three. He's hit some big shots. He's got the quick burst. He can get himself to the basket. Doesn't do it super regularly, but he can turn that on and do it. And certainly the reason Michigan sought him out of the transfer portal from UNC is that he is a pass first point guard. He's not someone who's trying to generate his own offense. He's not, trying to fill up the stat sheet in terms of points. He's trying to get downhill, but to feed, Yaxel, Adai, kick out for a 3-point shot, what have you. If you watched him at UNC, as you mentioned you did, you'll know that he was the most turnover prone player in the league last year. He's cut down on those turnovers. He's got a 22% turnover rate at this point. He's had his moments, that there are games where it looks like he's never handled a basketball in his life. But I wouldn't say that it's quite as bad as what you saw last year. He's taken significant steps forward. He's a, I think, a much better player. I think he's a better coached player. And certainly he has more talent around him that makes mistakes look not quite as bad. He has people who can kind of paper over any mistakes he makes because, yeah, when you got a 7-foot-3 center who's got a catch radius the size of Mars, a lob is a pretty easy and a pretty efficient play on a possession by possession basis too.
So pulling it out here, this long-running Josh Schertz Dusty May friendship that I'm sure is going to get super well publicized here in the next 24 hours, kind of across the college basketball landscape. You can see it come out in just these similar strategies of play. We're dealing with the number one and number two, St. Louis actually being first in terms of effective field goal percentage defenses. You have a St. Louis team that shoots their 2-point shots closer to the basket than anyone else in college basketball, going up against a Michigan defense that forces their opponents to shoot their twos farther away from the rim than anyone else besides Coastal Carolina. That's going to be a really fascinating battle. Two teams that are both fine with just being average in terms of turnover margin. Michigan, a good rebounding team overall. St. Louis, not great on the offensive glass, but should be able to deal with Michigan on the defensive side, and it's just these profiles and the way they want to play that are so similar, and it really feels like we're going to get in the first 5-10 minutes, and unless Michigan just goes hog wild, goes up 15-0 or something like that. First couple of minutes are going to be this kind of awkward feeling out, knowing that each team is kind of designed to counter each other, and this feels like a game that could be won in those first 5 minutes coming out of halftime, when the adjustments have to work out, and we can see who between May and Schertz is more comfortable with getting uncomfortable, essentially.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be fascinating. And hey, we saw the first 5 minutes of the second half last night with any chance of a Georgia comeback just going down the drain there. I think what's really interesting from the Michigan perspective is they're coming out of a series of games against teams that were a lot slower in tempo. Michigan, like St. Louis, is a team that likes to play fast. Like Michigan would love to live in a transition game because Michigan's an elite transition team on both the offensive and defensive perspectives. When you're playing in the Big Ten, I mean, the Big Ten has a bit of a reputation for being a slower conference. And while that's not always the case, it is the case that against Iowa near the end of the regular season, certainly against Purdue, like those are two of the slowest teams in college basketball. And, if you want to find the way to beat Michigan, what teams have tried to do is to limit the amount of possessions per game because fewer possessions, a little bit more variance on a possession by possession basis, right? So slow down and try to force Michigan into a half court game. St. Louis doesn't like to do that. St. Louis is one of the fastest teams in the country. St. Louis's average possession length is, fourth in the country. So it's going to be really interesting to see these two teams go up and down the court. I thought it was important for Michigan to play a team in Howard in the first round that is also a fast team and is also a team that wants to play in transition because Michigan, after dominating so much early in the year before teams figured out, hey, we got to slow these guys down, they've been plodding kind of through the back half of their season. Now they're in a bracket in a region with a lot of teams that like to play faster. So I'm going to be very curious to see if Michigan can get back to the highs that they had early this season when they were running up and down the court and basically running layup lines. And quite, I mean, that Gonzaga game that they won by 40, it was like a dunk contest against one of the better teams in the country. But yeah, I mean, to your point, these are two teams that offensively, like you're not going to see Dusty May, you're not going to see Josh Schertz. They're not calling plays. They have installed concepts, they have installed tendencies, but then they're relying on, their ball handlers, the point guard Elliot Cadeau, Jaxel Lendeborg when he's got the ball in his hands. They're relying on them to make plays based on what they see and the flow of the game. So I think it's going to be aesthetically a very pleasing game and one that could be a lot of fun for the average fan.
Yeah, and for me, just as we go through this, the keys to the game, it feels like they're all kind of big picture things. Like, Who wins out in the battle between Michigan's size and power versus St. Louis's speed and shooting? Who can win the chess match between Schertz and May? And then just the obvious, this is the type of game where St. Louis is going to have to shoot close to 40% from three. They're going to have to make up Michigan's talent advantage in some way. And if they have a poor night from beyond the arc, there's just no way they're going to be able to keep up with these guys.
Yeah, I mean Howard shot well from three. They were 10 for 16 in the first half against Michigan. I'll say that some of those were contested, but certainly not as contested as Michigan would have liked. And Howard, not a big team, and as a 16 seed, they were the second lowest ranked team to KenPom that Michigan had faced all season. So, yeah, water finds its level, and it eventually did, and Michigan pulled away in the second half. But the quality of 3-point looks that the Bison were generating in the first half yesterday was a bit of a red flag, and particularly like against a particularly w when Michigan had the interior advantage, where you don't have to help against a team that doesn't have a 7-footer, or you shouldn't have to. I think in terms of keys to the game, in terms of what I'll be watching early is what Adai Morrow looks like on the court. I mean, he played 10 minutes in the first half yesterday. That's obviously not a lot for your starting center. And part of that is when you're playing a team that basically plays five guards like Howard did, that can play five out, it's difficult for someone who's 7'3" and doesn't move quite that well to stay on the court. He becomes more of a liability defensively. And if St. Louis can do that to Adai Morrow tomorrow, that changes the complexion of the game, because offensively, Michigan can just run its offense through Adai Morrow. He isn't for being a 7'3" guy, he's an outstanding passer. Like, they can play high low with him, they can feed him in the lower high post and have him hitting cutting players. He will kick it out. He can make skip passes over anyone because he's taller than anyone else. But if he's a defensive liability, then he has to sit on the bench. So if St. Louis can make him uncomfortable enough that they can't play the defensive player of the year and one of their best offensive players, that changes the complexion of the game. That if you're looking for something before the first media timeout to watch, keep an eye on Adai Mara and keep an eye on how comfortable he looks and what impact he has on the defensive side of the ball.
So last thing for you, because we focused in on this big four, but this whole host of like role players, wings and forwards between McKennie and Burnett and Gale and Shedder, I don't know how to say the big forward's name. Who is going to be the most important in this one for Michigan?
Yeah, it is Cheddar, and nickname is Cheese, as you would expect. Not yet sponsored by Cheez-It, although I think he's been pushing for that throughout the course of his career. One of a rare player who has actually stayed at Michigan, stayed at one school, quite honestly, over the course of his entire collegiate career. In terms of who off the bench is an impact player, as you've alluded to, Michigan, one of its superpowers is that it can play eight players deep. And it would have been nine with LJ Kazin before he got hurt. Evan Maya, fantastic analytics site, actually called Will Cheddar the best eighth man in men's college basketball, or one of the best eighth men in men's college basketball. Michigan has that luxury. They have a lot of players who have, as Dusty May likes to say, sacrificed some personal glory to be on a team that won the Big Ten by four games and earned a number one seed and has dreams of cutting down the nets in a few weeks. In Indianapolis. In terms of players, I think we'll make an impact off the bench. Trey McKennie, for me, is the big name to watch. He's a true freshman combo guard from Orchard Lake St. Mary's up in Michigan. He is being thrust into a bigger role because of LJ Cason's injury. Very much a different type of player. Like, he's not an Elliot Cadeau. He's not someone who is a facilitator first. He's also not an LJ Cason. Like, he's not a microwave off the bench where he can get to the basket and find a way to score points. But what he is 6'4", 225. He is a physical defender for his size. He's someone on a team that has a very strict shot diet, where Michigan only takes three-pointers or shots at the rim because they're the two most efficient shots in college basketball. Or in any basketball, Trey McKennie is the one guy who seems to have the green light and is also very good at the mid-range. He's got a turnaround game, step back. He's got the elbow J. He's got everything. And he's a very good 3-point shooter as well. He's the type of player who, for the last couple of months, I've been feeling like he's going to win Michigan a game in March. This could be that type of game. He was a former 5-star prospect, and in games where it's, very good scheme, a team that's very well composed, like St. Louis, I expect is going to be sometimes the differentiator is you just have better talent. And if you're looking at that better talent, at least in the backcourt, for me, Trey McKinney could be that player.
All right, we'll see what McKennie can do. We'll see what happens in this Michigan-St. Louis game. But after listening to all that, the one thing I do know for sure is that you're going to keep giving some quality Michigan coverage. So where can all the good people find you?
I appreciate that, Tyler. You can follow all my work and the work of all my colleagues. I've got a couple colleagues down here with me in Buffalo. That's all over at the Michigan Insider on 24/7 Sports. So that's michigan.247sports.com. Plenty of coverage there. Obviously, Michigan focused, but taking a deep dive into what's going to be an awesome game tomorrow.
Yeah, everyone go give him a follow. And Alejandro, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
So we will close this out with a couple of keys to the game for Illinois and VCU. Unfortunately, on this very fast turnaround, I was unable to get an Illinois guest. So yeah, we're going to have to take the highs and the lows of championship week. You find a great guest out of nowhere, like Alejandro, and then another Big Ten team, you're left high and dry. So you guys got just me here for a couple of minutes, but I didn't want to not cover this at all. So just kind of bouncing around a couple of the keys to this game. So Illinois, for anyone who still remembers 2 years ago when they beat Duquesne in this same spot, once again, it was a team with fantastic analytics numbers that signal that they probably were actually better than their number three seed would indicate. This year's team doesn't have quite the same level of top-end pro talent, although the All-American freshman Keaton Wagler, their 6'6" point guard, certainly qualifies as that. But it's a far deeper team than that group, and one that still brings a level of significant power with the Ivicicic brothers. Dual 7-foot, 250-pound Croats who back up one another, both nationally ranked in terms of rebound rate, two of the top 12 players in the country in terms of two-point if percentage efficiency. And this whole Illinois offense just thrives on being efficient at the rim, as those two are, as basically all of their starters, including Page's kid, Andre Stojakovic, and David Mirkovic, who had a huge breakout game in the first round against Penn with a career-high 29 points to go with 9 rebounds. They're super efficient from two when they take them. They also shoot a ton of threes. They're basically nationally average in that. More or less, their shooters are Wagler, Mirkovic, and then Jake Davis coming off the bench, who actually comes in right below Wagler for the team lead at about 41%. Other than that, it's a lot of guys who take them at a decent volume but hit them at a slightly below average rate. But one of the most fascinating things I found with this team is the just dual end extremes to their defensive metrics. Nobody sends opponents to the foul line less than Illinois, and nobody turns over opponents less than Illinois. And some of the very fascinating things as I go through this, the more I realize that this, in many ways, is just a better version of North Carolina. And a lot of the keys to that game are going to be similar keys to this one. Now, I believe it was Sam Fetterman on the Bubbles, Brackets, and Bid Stealers podcast who was waxing poetically the other day when he was picking his bracket about how Illinois will eventually be taken down by a team that has fantastic guards who can really attack individual matchups. And you look at their losses in 2026, and a lot of the teams fit that category. Wisconsin twice, Michigan State, UCLA, Michigan. Maybe not. Michigan's probably the furthest away from that, but it really begs the question of whether or not Terrence Hill is that guy. And he has done it over and over again against A-10 competition, and he did it against a just pitiful North Carolina perimeter defense. Illinois is going to be a different type of challenge. There's no way he's scoring 34 again like he did the other day, but could he score 24? Is that going to be good enough against this defense that one of the experts of college basketball has true reservations about? I think that's probably the first key. This is going to have to be a significant performance again from Terrence Hill, putting this VCU offense on his back. Number two, a battle between big men from two rival Balkan nations. Can Lazar Djokovic deal with the Avcic brothers and keep this top five nationally offensive rebounding group from just crushing VCU in second chance points? And this is going to be yet another significant challenge for Michael Bell. Now, maybe he can take advantage of his speed as he was able to do late in that game against Henry Vassar last time, but these two guys together, just absolute mountains of men, are going to be overpowering for both of the VCU bigs, and something that once again they have just not seen very much of in this game, in this season. And then the other one, just can VCU find a way to generate a decent amount of foul shots? And against a North Carolina defense that does not foul very much, they still found a way to get to the line 16 times. That's probably about the bare minimum. Can they get there somewhere in the 16 to 20 range? This is not going to be a redo of the A-10 tournament, but they're just going to have to find a way to generate cheap points at the line. And it certainly won't hurt if, once again, they see a high-level opponent miss a couple of crucial ones on their end. But yeah, those are my keys. Like I said, unfortunately, just couldn't find an Illinois guest on short notice, and terrible timing that both of my all college basketball experts, who I would have asked to sub in, are both at games today. Tis his life at the NCAA tournament. Hopefully, I could suffice there, but I know you guys all got a great Michigan scouting report. Thank you to Alejandro for joining me for that. Thank you to Zach for joining me to recap that St. Louis game. If you missed it, Friday morning put out an individual standalone segment. George Templeton from Rams Rewind came on, and we recapped that spectacular VCU North Carolina game. So if you haven't heard that yet, make sure you do so before VCU and Illinois tips off. And you know what? If one of these two teams win, we'll be back here on Sunday with a recap and then a Sweet 16 preview during the week. If not, recaps will maybe come Monday in a shorter form. Not entirely sure how that'll happen, but let's hope it doesn't get to that. Let's hope it's the former and we have at least one deep recap coming up.